Chip, would you tell me, please, about the rare congressional action that inspired this particular exhibition?
Absolutely. So throughout the history of America, there have been five times that there have been a congressional apology to different ethnic groups. And the first time was for slavery to the African Americans. The second time was to the Native American Indians. The third time was to the people of Hawaii, as Hawaii was a sovereign nation before we took it over. The fourth time was to the Japanese Americans for the internment camps during World War II. And then in 2012, so a year and a half ago, was to the Chinese for the Exclusion Act. And that is actually the catalyst. The 2012 apology was the catalyst for the exhibition, The Other Side, Chinese and Mexican Immigration to America.
When you go into this particular exhibition, how do these five artists put a human face on what was happening with Mexican and Chinese immigrants between 1882 and 1943?
Well, one of the goals of mine for the exhibition was to take this very current topic, especially with the Mexico border situation that's going on right now, but taking these two, the Chinese historical viewpoint and then talking about the contemporary Mexican. These are big topics, but again, I think the importance was bringing a face to the show and to this idea and theme of the exhibition. So of the five artists that are in the exhibition, three of the artists speak directly about individuals that have gone through this situation, this immigration situation. So, for example, the Chinese artist Hong Liu, who lives in Northern California, she had researched and done these three paintings. Actually, it's not just three. Three are in the exhibition, but she's done a number of paintings in this series about two very prominent Chinese-American women from the 1880s. And why this is so unusual is that most historical and factual documentation of this period really concentrates on the Chinese men that came to either mine for gold in the 1840s or to build the railroads in the 1860s. So a lot of research has been done on the men in China in the 1880s, but very little has been done on the women of the 1880s. And there's a reason for this, just sheer numbers, number one. But number two is actually the U.S. government had made it illegal for women to come to America in the mid-19th century. Part of it was actually this worked together both from the Chinese viewpoint and the American viewpoint. The Americans didn't want families to come over. They just wanted the work labor force to come over. So by barring women from coming, the Chinese would not establish families and stay here. But this actually was not that far off from the way the Chinese looked at it also. The Chinese that came to America first called themselves not immigrants, and this is a Chinese translation, but not as immigrants, but sojourners. And a sojourner is someone who will just go to a new location and work and save enough money and come back. This also makes a lot of sense in Chinese religion and history because the Chinese believe in ancestral worship, and to be buried with your family for that continuum is crucial. And so it was a very difficult situation when these Chinese workers perished in America and their bodies weren't able to be shipped back to be with their family. So it really dovetailed. So there were many reasons, both for the Chinese and for the Americans, why women were barred from coming. But just as in everything in life, where there's a will, there's a way. And a number of Chinese women came over. They were mostly smuggled over as indentured slaves or servants or really the concubines. And again, it's just human nature that you would want people who speak the same language to, you know, share your life in America. So these women were brought over as wives or concubines. And Hong Liu was able to research two particular women that not only survived the trek over and the harsh conditions, but also thrived and became prominent wealthy women in their communities against all odds. They have to think at the same time, and this is when women weren't allowed to vote. I mean, really, women were second-class citizens, and for these women to survive in that is pretty amazing.
And Chip had made sure that women were also well represented in this particular exhibition in terms of the artists who were exhibiting their work.
I'm very interested in showing and talking about a complete picture. So I also wanted to make sure there are actually three women artists and two men. And most often, you know, there are more men artists in the shows, and the women don't have quite a strong voice. In this case, I actually found that the three women artists, I put three in because of the women had the stronger voices than the men. So, and then the last thing is that because this is a visual exhibition, there are both representational arts, so the cactus, the fence, the portraits of Polybemus and China Mary are very recognizable and representational. But there are two artists that I also would just want to mention, Z. Lin from Seattle, and also Tony de los Reyes from Los Angeles, and they are expressing the ideas of the exhibition through abstraction. And that sounds like it might be more difficult, but it's a really beautiful and poetic counterpoint to the representational aspects of the other artists. So it really, again, gives an aesthetically beautiful but a different way of approaching the whole idea. Tony de los Reyes's paintings are abstractions of the fence, and they are right across the room from Andrea Bauer's physical representation of the graphite drawing of the fence. So you have two different views of the fence, and it's the same thing in the Chinese room. You have Polybemus's portrait across from a ghost-like version of a railroad worker. So the show has a lot of symmetry in it, and I'm really pleased with that.
I'm looking at the representation of the fence, and if you look at it, it looks beautiful and delicate. It's border compression number one, and it's in all kinds of soft blues, and then you realize he's drawing the border fence. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. So that line that you see there is the actual border between California and Mexico at the Baja. And so it's a different way of looking at the fence. You're looking at it from up above, almost like from an aerial, you know, topographical type map type way, as opposed to being standing in front of it with Andrea. And he's also saying a lot about his series is called Border Theory. And this is so perfect for the show because Border Theory is 50% about the physical borders between Mexico and America, but the other 50% is talking about art borders, fine art borders. So in other words, the color wheel relationships, formal compositional issues. So it's half about politics and half about the formality of art making. And I think that's also a really nice compliment to the show because that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to make this as an art exhibition that explores this deep idea of immigration. But you can take it on many different levels. And if you want to just look at it purely as an art form, which he also is saying, Tony is saying in his paintings, you can just strictly look at it artistically. But if you want to go deeper, there are many, many, many more layers. And I kind of look at my show the same way. If you want to just walk through it and see it as an art exhibition, just as paintings and sculpture, you can do that. But as soon as you start delving in, there's so much more meaning to each piece and to the exhibition.
I wish you'd talk to me about the color wheel representation and Mexican painting.
So what I meant by that is, you know, there's complementary and contrasting colors, like, well, you have the primary colors. And so when you mix, for example, yellow and blue, you get green. And so those are complementary. When you go opposite then and you mix yellow and red, you get orange. So orange and green are contrasting, but they're on the other side of the wheel. So when you paint the art, as you can see Tony's piece there, so you can see how he delineated. He made color choices about what to pair next to each other. And in some of them, they're complementary. They're like the blues you see there. So it's very soft. And then, but it's very interesting, the border of where the colors touch was treated very sensitively. How do you make the borders touch without blending it? So if you look at it as a political border, How do you make this border that's a demarcation but not blend it?
I'm looking at this, and you almost take for granted when you see his work. The border looks like a black line. He makes it look very easy.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And actually, it was a really interesting way he made that line. So he built a wire armature that's about 3 feet high, and then he uses linen, not canvas, to paint on. And he laid the canvas over the wire armature like a tent. And so the actual, he shaped the wire to be the exact shape of the border. And then laying the loose linen over it, he poured the paint down like on a mountain. He poured it one direction, and then he poured it the other direction. So the colors were going away from that point, that border line. Once he flattened it out, then he went back and he painted the actual line, the actual border.
That is a gorgeous work, and it certainly will provoke some thought and some conversations.
Yes, exactly. The other thing about his work that's really great is, and this goes into what I was just talking about with this mountain and how it's going down two directions. So he also looks at this, both artistically and politically, like a magnet. So if you turn a magnet in a certain direction, they will attract each other. And if you flip the magnet around, they'll repel each other. And so both artistically and also politically, he's making that metaphor of the magnet in his work. Because throughout the 19th century and the 20th century, America has had this magnetic push-pull relationship with bringing in labor. I mean, when we needed the labor to build the railroads or to supply labor in the Southwest, we invite these people, immigrants, to come in. As soon as we have the Depression or there's an economic problem, there were 500,000 Mexicans who were deported during the Depression because there was no work. But then as soon as World War II came around and we needed the labor force back, they were all invited back again. So this push-pull is not only in the art, but I think it's a really great metaphor for the whole idea of the labor issue and the immigration situation.
You and I are listening to Chip Tom, guest curator of the USC Pacific Asia Museum's current exhibit, which is entitled The Other Side, Chinese and Mexican Immigration to America. We talked about some of the more three-dimensional elements of this particular show.
Andrea Bowers has done this monument to the people who, the Mexicans, who have perished crossing the border between Mexico and America. And they make this arduous trip across the desert. Unfortunately, they're told that it's only a 13-hour walk, and they're not prepared, and it's really up to a 3-4-day walk. And a lot of them die from dehydration, hypothermia, just horrible conditions. And because there's not a direct path, when they die, there's no record of their bodies. And so sometimes they stumble on people and the remains. And then the families are really at a loss also because the loved ones basically disappeared on the journey, and so they have to try to track them down. So Andrea Bowers' memorial is a graphite drawing of the fence. It's not a life-size drawing, but it gives you, when one stands in front of it, you get the physical barrier, you get the feeling with the barbed wire and the gray color of the graphite. And what she's done is she's written the names of all the known people. And I really stress known people because the majority are unknown people who have died. So on the fence, drawn on the fence, are the names of all the people who have perished. So visually, it's a little bit like Maya Lin's Vietnam memorial. But this is different. It's not black granite, and that's not etched. It's just a graphite drawing. But it's an ongoing one. We have six of these 15-foot by 6-foot panels of paper that the fence is drawn on. And we couldn't fit all 25 in, but this is an ongoing memorial. So as she's doing more research and adding more names, she's continuing the drawing. So it's an unfinished memorial. And again, most of the people, though, are not even on the list because they haven't been able to find out all the names of all the people who died. So, but it's very poignant to read the names of the people on the fence. And again, give it a more personal interpretation. And then the third artist is Margarita Cabrera, who's Mexican-American and lives in El Paso, Texas. she did these fascinating soft sculptures. They are sculptures of cacti, a whole field of cacti. And the cacti are made out of sewn border patrol uniforms. And so what she's done is she's reversed it. She's made the guards into this prickly plant that's indigenous. But they're not. They're really, you know, they're placed there by the U.S. government. And in the exhibition, they're the ones who are hiding in plain sight, as opposed to the immigrants who are crossing the desert. And what Margarita had done in, not in the four, the, she did this in a series, but what she's done is she's talked to different people. She wanted to get people who had actually made the crossing to sew these Border Patrol. And they weren't seamstress. They weren't necessarily skilled at sewing, but it didn't matter. She was with them. It's a collaborative process that they were making these cactus together out of the, and discovering how to do it best as they went along. But what she had done is she had asked people to write their story about the difficulties of the actual crossing and put this into the cactus. So they're not easily recognizable, but their names and their journey are all sewn into each one of the cactus. And it's interesting because they are not legal. They don't really necessarily want the whole story publicized, but at the same time, it's really important that people know what it was actually like to make the journey.
And again, this sounds like it would be an ongoing exhibition, like there is no end to this.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I understand there is also one called Gold Mountain.
Gold Mountain is, and for many reasons, one of the most prominent pieces in the show. Number one, for the sheer size, it's the largest sculpture that's in the exhibition, and it's in the middle of the room one. And it is a pair of real railroad tracks that we got from the Metro line, which was really great in L.A. They were very helpful and generous in lending us these railroad tracks. And the fascinating part about it was six men came to install them for us. So we have a video that's on the website of the museum of the men carrying the ties, the wooden ties in first, and laying them down parallel. And then perpendicular to the ties, they carried the tracks, the iron tracks, and laid them on top. And then they hammered the spikes, the same spikes. This was built exactly the same way they built the railroad 100 years ago. So they drove the spikes to hold the rails to the ties. And it was just like you see in the movies, where they would take turns and they were, you know, sledgehammering these spikes into the wood. And you could transport yourself back 100 years and watching these men build the railroads just like the Chinese did in the 1880s. So then after they laid the railroad tracks, we built an armature, and we bought 200,000 fortune cookies. And we poured them on the center of the track. So in the middle, you have about a six-foot-high mountain of fortune cookies. And the smell and the size of it is overwhelming. I mean, you can't... The sweet smell of the fortune cookies is the first thing that one that kind of senses, even before you even see it as you turn the corner. But Hong Liu, who is the artist that did the paintings of Polly Bemis and China Mary, created and came up with this idea of what a great analogy that this was the dream, the fortune cookie built on the backs of the railroad workers or gold miners was the dream of every, you know, Chinese immigrant coming over. The other interesting thing is that, as far as the title is concerned, in China the myth was that the streets of America were lined in gold. And so the nickname for San Francisco and the U.S. in general was Gumshan, which is translated to Gold Mountain. So Hong Liu took that mythological name and named her sculpture Old Gold Mountain. And so you have the railroad tracks with this huge mound of fortune cookies. So it's a great, great idea.
This would be amazing to see. if you, as the curator of this particular exhibit, The Other Side, could only communicate one thing to people at CU, what would you want them to take away from it?
So I think what I'd like to say, Dot, is that first and foremost, this is a visual art exhibition. There have been, since the 2012 apology, there have been a number of historical exhibitions through photography, actual pictures of people working on the railroad or what it was like in the 1880s. And I think that is one way of communicating this idea, and I applaud it. But my idea for The Other Side, Chinese and Mexican immigration, was to take the idea of immigration and how in America we're basically all immigrants. So there's this universal relationship that you can come away from the exhibition. And I wanted to show, though, that we have history. We can never forget about the Exclusion Act of 1882, but we also have to look at what's happening in America today. So that I wanted to bring it visually contemporary by showing the Mexican-American border crossing issue right now. And I think if there's one thing that I would like people to go away with is to make this comparison and to think, if one person thinks a little deeper about this whole immigration issue, how things really haven't changed much in 130 years. We had fear and prejudice and economic circumstances in China that all came together. People were willing to risk their lives to come to America and to find their dream. But they met a lot of prejudice here in America. And then if you look at currently, we have the economic situation and we have prejudice and fear going on right now. And if we can learn lessons from the past and hopefully bring it to the future and have people think just a little bit about this whole situation from seeing the exhibition, then I'd be very happy. Then I'd consider it a success.
Chip, thank you for your time today.
My pleasure. Dot, thank you.